Hey everyone, this is Josh from Solopreneur Grind, and I am here with Brennan Dunn, founder of DoubleYourFreelancing.com. Brennan, really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
Awesome. So Brennan, I've actually been a longtime fan. I didn't mention this off the air before we started, but I've been on your email list for a little while, and I actually purchased your product, Double Your Freelancing, years ago when I was transitioning from full-time corporate worker to what I do now. So really excited to have you on, but can you tell those who don't know much about you or haven't heard about you kind of who you are, what you're working on these days, and then we'll get into the journey that got you there?
Nice. So, well, first off, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, I didn't know that. So glad it's been hopefully helpful. Sure. My quick kind of 10,000 foot perspective overview is I run two companies at the moment. One of them is Double Your Freelancing, which is we provide courses and free content and training for all things freelancing for freelancers and agency owners. Mm-hmm. The focus or the difference, I guess, is that we're focused more on tactics, more on specifics, not as much about like, I'm not very good with the whole like, oh, if you think it, you can do it kind of thing. So
right.
I try to be overly tactical, and my focus is on helping people who are very good at what they do technically get better at the business side of things. So how to go about selling to people, getting leads, closing them, and so on. So that's business number one. That one I've had, I could get in the backstory, but that's kind of been around-ish since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I have is Right Message, which is I used to call it website personalization software, but we've kind of shifted into being more, still personalization, but more focused on calls to action. So that's a software company that I co-founded back in 2017. And I kind of split my time between them both, with most of my attention these days being on Right Message. I have a few other projects I'm working on. I'm doing a course now on ConvertKit. I've done one on Drip. So I do things that are kind of outside the scope of both of them from time to time too. But yeah, I mean, that's what I'm working on now. Backstory, I used to own and run an agency in the mid-2000s, exited that to start my first software company, PlanScope. That was in 2011. I sold that company in 2016. So I've been doing the agency / software / online training thing for a little over, I mean, definitely over 10 years now.
Right.
12 years or so.
Right. And did you get right into the agency out of school? Did you have, were you working corporate before all of that?
Yeah, I was. So my corporate stint wasn't that long. I was done school. I want to say it was 2004, 2005 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I got a job at first at a normal software company, doing Java development. And that kind of was my first entry into all things coding for money. I'd always enjoyed software. I'd always enjoyed programming, but never professionally until then. I ended up leaving that company to work at a web agency. So that was my first kind of real experience with client work. And I was more on the technical implementation side, eventually became effectively the CTO of the agency. And that was in Florida. And then in, 2007, I want to say, I moved from Florida to Virginia, which is where I am now. And the company, I remote worked for them for a bit, but I was the only remote employee, which made things kind of weird. So ended up leaving that. Didn't really have any job prospects around here, so I ended up freelancing. And one thing led to another, and before I knew it, the freelance business had turned into an agency.
Right.
And that all started really around 2008, late 2008 or so.
Right. Can we get into some more details of the one thing led to another? Because, you know, a lot of the listeners and solopreneurs already out there, that could be super tough, right? Can you talk a little bit about how you pulled it off, if you don't mind going into those details?
Absolutely. So I'm going to preface everything by saying early on, I got very lucky by getting a lot of referrals when seemingly all at the same time. And, you know, the choice I had was to either turn away the work or to try to find a way to do it. I never thought about backlogging or queuing people up or anything like that. I should have, but at the time, those were my two options. I thought you know, I'm pretty good with the business side of things, I think. So I'd like to actually make this something bigger than just Brennan for Hire. So yeah, I mean, I did get lucky early on in that I made a lot of mistakes, namely, well, the thing I did right, I think, was I originally hired everyone as independent contractors. So I brought on people that I knew from conferences. So I'd started going to Ruby conferences, which is the programming language I used. Mm-hmm. I knew people from conferences and I just said, hey, I know you're a freelancer. I've got this client. Would you mind, do you have any availability to work on it with me? I'll pay you this much an hour. And I didn't really know what the split should be. So I just did 60-40. So 40% to me, 60% to them. The value prop was, I've already got the client. They're on a silver platter. I do all the project management. You just get to do your sitting in a coffee shop with headphones on and writing code thing, right. Which is what a lot of developers especially just want to do. So that was the early model. And then I kind of got bit by the brick and mortar thing for some reason and thought, well, it's nice that I have a bunch of distributed people. And we had people from really all over the East Coast of the US who at the peak, it was eight of us. So me and seven others, all independent contractors. And they were all project-based, right? So we got lucky in that our big whale client pretty much hired almost all of us at any given time. So I was very enjoying that and the venture capital money that was fueling this thing. But then, you know, they kind of fell out. They ran out of money effectively and they weren't building anything that was ever going to make money. So, I kind of hit the reset button. But then I got bit by this need to, well, what if I did it again, but I did it as more of a proper physical agency. So instead of it being this kind of remote collective, let's bring it all in house. So that's what I did. And, again, a lot of the early success came from residual work from the virtual agency before, but I started to realize pretty early on that I couldn't just maintain, this kind of hope a referral comes at the right time kind of way of doing business, especially now that I had fixed overhead, namely employees. So started hiring around that early on around projects, but then I started to really focus my time and energies on really getting a systematic method of bringing new work in the door. So my focus shifted away from just being one of many or one of a few people doing the client work to being basically the salesperson in chief. So, which I think is kind of common. If anyone who ends up running an agency, a smaller one, ends up becoming basically their job is sales, because they need to keep everyone fed, and down the road they might also hire out like a project manager, somebody to run the factory, as I used to call it. Right. But yeah, I mean that was my job, and that's where a lot of the things that I teach about nowadays emerged from initially, which was trying to realize the business case for, you know, why are people paying us to write code. What does it actually mean? What do they really need? How do I then use that to my advantage to make it so people are more likely to hire us? How do we then translate that into building up better systems for getting leads instead of just hoping that referrals come at the right time? And a lot of that was just kind of R&D'd. Again, it's not original to me in any way, but it was just original to me in the sense that I didn't know how to do that, or I wasn't really, you know, experienced with that at all. So I just focused all my time on building up systems that would keep us in business, because eventually our payroll got to $100,000 a month. Oh, wow. And we had, you know, 11 people on staff, and the whole, like, if I was just completely dependent on hoping we got the right referral or the right person somehow found our website and somehow filled out the contact form at the right time, that would be a very hard battle. And we, you know, there were things I didn't do. Like at the time I wasn't doing all the work was transactional. So nothing was on a recurring or retainer basis. So we had a project. Yeah. We'd get a good amount of chunk of money coming in and it might last a few months, but then it's handed off and then hopefully something else is waiting. So
right.
We had to get pretty good at the whole like lead gen thing.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about that in terms of what you ended up kind of figuring out or putting in place as these systems, as well as What do you think you did right to get all those referrals at the very beginning, even when it still was the kind of, like the tech or the not storefront version of the agency?
Right. So let me start with that second one first. So I think what I did right was I was a little too accommodating. And
right.
I people liked that, and people had dealt with quote unquote flaky freelancers. And then they came across me and I was not flaky. So they liked that. And I think word spread, and then one thing led to another, and I would be getting a lot of referrals. So I think that's what helped me early on. And obviously that was more of a my way of doing things thing, and not really anything product related, if that makes sense. So nothing about, the model or the process, or I guess it was the process if you think about it, because that, being responsive to everything else is a key benefit to a good process. So I think it was just, a combination of that along with just, I was in a hot industry, the Ruby on Rails industry. And I was one of the few people who at the time was offering it as a service for hire versus full-time, like hire me to code your Rails app. So I think, that definitely helped early on. Especially since we were able to make a pretty competitive kind of shot in the dark against things like Java and .NET, which were bulkier than Ruby on Rails at the time. So we were able to come in with more of a lean, build your MVP, get yourself off the ground quickly, sort of angle. So I think that's what helped. And that was more situational. That was, again, mid to late 2000s that helped with that. But in terms of when we started to become more of a brick and mortar company, so we're local, I'm in Southeast Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia specifically. It's not a big tech community. No one here knew what Ruby on Rails was. No one was looking for that.
Right.
So we had to get a little creative if we wanted local clients. So the big eye opener for me, and again, she didn't invent it, but all that matters is she invented it to me, was I was at a meetup group. So I'd belonged to a few meetup groups locally because I thought the way of getting work was to network. So I ended up finding a few different groups. I remember getting an email from one of the groups I was on that mentioned that somebody named Barbara, who's an attorney from the peninsula, which is north of us, was going to give a talk on online digital copyrights and everything you need to know about them. And I'm a coder. I was not thinking or even cared about copyrights or anything like that. But I thought, this is something I should know something about, like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and what that means. Like, I just figured it would be, if anything, a interesting thing to learn. Mm-hmm. So I went to this presentation that was followed by a networking event. And that was another draw. It was, well, even if I don't get anything out of the talk, at least I can mingle and maybe get a client or something. That was always the goal, right, of networking. So I listened to Barbara's talk, and she just gave a very good high-level overview of, here's what you need to know about the DMCA Act. Here's why. Here's what trademarks mean, what copyrights mean, and just kind of like a crash course in about 45 minutes about all things her world, which was trademarking and copyrights and stuff. On every chair was a folder with printouts of her slides. So, we get there and there was probably about 50 or 60 people who were in attendance at this event. And it was just held at, I think, like a mortgage company opened up their office to let this event run out of it. I got her slides and had her business card also in it. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. I don't really need her. I don't need anything about I don't need to hire anyone like her at the moment, but that was good to know. And I did my networking thing and called it a day. Well, it makes sense why, but ultimately I started, I would get consulting clients and they'd ask for, hey, do you know anyone who could be a good attorney to help with this and that? I immediately just defaulted to Barbara, even though she didn't know me. I'd never really hired her in any way, but I referred people to her. So that got me thinking, and later it was confirmed by people who are much smarter, much more experienced by me. But I started thinking things like, well, is there an equivalent of that for me? can I be like Barbara and go in front of a bunch of business people, business owners who are not looking for web development, who are not looking for especially Ruby on Rails or, you know, what we do. And I thought, well, what if I did a talk on what to do when you kind of outgrow Microsoft Excel? So I knew just having done the networking thing and knowing a bit about business that a lot of these people love Excel and are glued to it. But this was before the era of Dropbox and everything. So people were emailing Excel spreadsheets back and forth across the office. You never knew which one was the most current one. There was no auditing really that anyone was doing. And it was just this, you know, it was people were depending on these spreadsheets to get things done internally. And I thought, well, what if I could build something that would be like, we call them CRUD apps, but you know, create, retrieve, update, and delete, like little simple apps that would let you pull up records and then edit them. And then maybe if you edit them a certain way, it sends off a notification email to this person and that person needs that and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So basically my goal was, well, what if I get people in a room, I tell them about what's beyond, like what do you do when you hit the upper limits of what you're doing with Excel? And give them some ideas and tell them about how custom software could help them achieve what they need done. Because what I realized was that a lot of these people thought, a lot of the local business owners especially, didn't think that custom software was anything they ever needed. They thought that was an IBM or Microsoft thing. They didn't think it was a, you know, Joe's insurance company thing, right? So
right.
I did this presentation initially to the local Chamber of Commerce. They had an education series and I gave a talk to about 80 people. And then I basically said, hey, if you want to find out more about this or maybe meet with me for coffee or something like that, here's a URL you can go to. And that was basically just an opt-in form for our MailChimp list at the time. And that was it, but it worked. And we got a lot of people who were there who opted in. And then we did that a few times. We eventually did one about like, should you build custom software? Should you buy off the shelf stuff? What we ended up doing, and again, this is all iterative and it sounds like I had this grand plan early on, but I really didn't. I just kind of stumbled into different things and trying different things. But we eventually got to the point where we had 3,000 people in our little, what's the word I'm looking for? Like backwater kind of tent, kind of area where 3,000 people local to us who had benefited from us because we eventually did things like when we'd launch a new client project, we email our whole list, which was risky. And I remember people who worked for me were like, why are you doing this? I'd email them and say, hey, we just launched this project. Come celebrate it, the launch with us at so-and-so bar, first rounds on us. So you email a bunch of local people and say free beer, that draws people out, right? So we had people who would come to these and, you know, the gamble was they're going to go to this thing. They're going to see us celebrating the success of somebody who's not them. And that, hey, this person has now delivered something. They now have this new thing out in the open, this new product, this new way of doing business or something like that. Don't you wish you were them? And kind of instill a bit of FOMO. That was the plan. But I think it worked because eventually that drew more people out and then it kind of just grew. And we had, you know, we weren't some absolute authority, but to 3,000 people in our area, they knew who we were. It'd probably been to a few of our events. It'd gotten value from us and so on. And before we knew it, we were getting referrals from them to like Mitt Romney hired us in 2011. We don't know anyone there, but somebody local to us knew like their brother-in-law or something was on the campaign, interested. Like what was interesting was we ended up working with a bunch of big high-profile companies who were not directly in this audience we built, but instead were within the network of the people in this audience. So, you know, it's like, oh, we've got this little sleeper cell army of people who are referring us. And what was the big eye opener for me was when I was talking to a mentor of mine, Marty, and he basically kind of told me something that stuck with me ever since, which was, well, you know, Brennan, why do your past clients refer people to you? Because most referrals come from past clients, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I don't know why. Why do they? And he's like, because you've given them something of value. You've given them a project. They've benefited from it. They've succeeded with it. And you're probably top of mind. So maybe they recently worked with you or they thought about the work you did with them or something like that. Those are the two kind of components that lead to a referral. So what is basically happening is when you bring somebody in to hear a talk and they get a lot of value from you, and then maybe they go to another thing and get more value from you, they've now benefited from you. And because you're doing these things on a constant recurring basis, you're kept top of mind. So now if they are get a call from a friend of theirs who says, hey, I need some help with so-and-so, do you know anybody? You're top of mind, and that referral equation maintains. So it's basically you've effectively increased your surface area of luck. So you have more potential chances for referrals. And it really did work. And if you think about it, this is kind of the identical model that a lot of people online are using now with, you know, creating educational content, putting it out there, using this to kind of get people in the door, and then over time building up enough trust and influence with them that you can then pitch them on a paid product. So, you know, that model, which is very common online, is what I was screwing around with back in, you know, the late 2000s. And ever since has been very helpful for me because I'm now able to, you know, help people, agencies or more established freelancers, kind of figure this stuff out and think about, well, what is that? How can you do something where while you're doing your client work during the day, you have people who are engaging with evergreen, independent, free content of yours, getting, you know, opting into some sort of funnel like a lead magnet, and then getting to the point where they're thinking, oh, I was lured in because you said something like, you know, find out how to get, you know, 5x returns on Facebook ads or, you know, something like some sort of clickbaity kind of right. thing that brings them in and then teaches them everything they need to know about. Here's how ad campaigns on Facebook work. Here's what works. Here's what doesn't work. Here's what you should be doing, so on and so forth. And then leave them with two options. Either if you want me, who just taught you all this, to do it for you, here's a path for that. Or good luck, have fun, do it on your own. You're probably going to mess up a bunch, but, you know, have fun. And, you know, that's the thing that I'm, my big thing is, and this is something I've been focused on lately, is getting people from not being 100% reactive. So if you think about it, like the average, what the life cycle of a project is, you know, somebody finds out they have an issue of some sort. So their sales suck. They try to think through, well, why do my sales suck and what can I do about it? Maybe they think, oh, maybe it's the design of my website, or, you know, and, but it could also be, maybe it's the advertising, it's the branding, it's the copy on it, it's the way it's set up, or, you know, any number of different things could be something that they figure out is the problem why they're, or is the reason why their sales suck. And then they start looking for, well, okay, so it's a website. Do I buy a template? Do I use this platform? Do I hire a designer? All right, I hire a designer. How do I find a designer? They Google around, they ask for recommendations. And so that's what needs to happen to get somebody in front of a, say, a web designer. So my thinking is, well, how do you get people along before they even know that they have a problem and educate them toward realizing that they have this issue, that design is one way of solving it, and letting them basically self-assess and self-diagnose through your help, an issue that's affecting their business, and then leading them basically to getting to the point of saying, hey, you need to, this is, if this is a problem for you, here's my recommendation on how to fix that. And that leads to you.
Right.
So that's my current thing I've been geeking out with and focusing on. And yeah, so I've been talking a while. Hopefully it's been helpful.
Yeah, no, that explains a lot. And even within that kind of story that you were taking us through, there's a lot of kind of insights to glean from that. So that's really great. And especially the parts on, yeah, just creating value for people for free. You get them in the door, you build the trust. I mean, that's how I ended up buying your product, was I'd read a ton of your blog posts because I found them valuable and helpful. And then when you still realize that, you know, there's more you want help with, it's the easy decision, right? And then the other thing that I really connected with was when you were talking about networking, what I've learned in the last year and a half since starting my own business and starting to network a lot more is, you know, don't feel like you're wasting your time. I don't think you should ever feel like you're wasting your time networking, because even if you make a few friends that are never a potential client, you are gaining access to their network as well, like you said, and you never know when down the road that person's uncle or friend or associate might need something that you can provide. And as long as you're top of mind, like you said, then you're effectively gaining access to all those other people's networks, which is super effective, at least I've found, and it sounds like you have too. So that was really great, Brendan. Can you talk a little bit about transitioning out of the agency? I'd really like to get into especially the Double Your Freelancing and how that started, because the blog is great. I highly recommend it, doublyourfreelancing.com, for all those, and we'll have links in the description as well. But that kind of, I want to call it a business model, or just blogging, or, you know, providing business information for other people. I mean, I'm trying to do it right now. So I'd love to hear how that started, how you transitioned out of the agency, you know, kind of the next step to the story.
Good question. So I was running the agency, and again, we were doing well and we were getting clients and everything else. I was traveling a lot, because most of our clients, even though we had a local audience, were remote. Thing about my area is they just typically couldn't afford us. Mm-hmm. So I'd be on the road a lot. And on top of that, I was looking at friends of mine who had these great businesses where they had lots and lots and lots of people paying them $20 a month versus me, who have a very few people paying us lots of money a month. Mm-hmm. And I liked that model so much better. Right. I like the idea of thinking, well, you know, if you have 1,000 people paying you 20 a month, no one really has any sway, right? Like, no one can say, hey, can you work late for me tonight? Or, and you know what I mean? Like, it ended up being, I like, that was really attractive to me. And right. The more I've gotten to know kind of people like that, like me, you know, Double Your Freelancing is at, you know, we're just about 50,000 people currently. And that's the number one thing, is most everyone sees consulting or freelancing as a means to an end, where the end is something like selling their own products and waking up to some stranger paying them money. So that's the end goal, I think, for most. So my journey to getting there has been, I thought, well, you know, I'm a web developer. My company, we build web apps for people. So naturally, I can do something like that for myself. Had a bunch of bad ideas early on, like an Airbnb, but for food. Where, you know, like, hey, here's somebody who, they immigrated from India and they make amazing curry and they're much better than the local curry joint in town. And you can go and basically buy a seat at their kitchen table for this much money. Didn't really work. Right. But eventually I got to the point where I thought, well, what if I think what unfortunately a lot of agencies do, which is, wouldn't it be great if, you know, I hate all the project management tools out there, I should build my own. Or I hate all the CRMs out there, I should build my own. So I built a project management tool called PlanScope. And the focus was, it was targeting freelancers and agencies. Well, it was actually targeting agencies at first, but then I quickly realized finding agencies online is much harder than finding freelancers online. So I shifted to freelancers. Just from a like search volume and everything else perspective. And then I realized that just building software and putting up a marketing site doesn't mean you're going to get people using it. So there needs to be some way of getting people to find out that your software even exists. So I started doing the content marketing thing, and I just wrote about things that I'd learned doing the agency thing. And that started to work. I mean, eventually, you know, I started to rank for different things on Google, and I would kind of get backlinks to them, which ended up helping the domain and everything else. And people would come over who would be typing into Google, how do I write a proposal? They'd find an article of mine on proposal writing. But then the issue was the pitch, the call to action at the footer of the article was, hey, sign up for a trial of PlanScope with this project management tool. And right. There'd be that disconnect between, I'm looking for information on how to write a proposal, and you're telling me sign up for software. Like, you know, that might have worked if I was selling proposal software or something else, but there was that disconnect there. So I heard about these email course things. So I thought, well, what if the pitch was a 5-day email course? And so people search for content, go read content, they like the content and they want to dive deeper and get more content. I have a crash course on freelancing or something. So I did that, a 5-day crash course on how to freelance. That worked again. And one thing led to another. I was kind of dared by a friend of mine, Amy Hoy, to write a book because I was struggling on the Planscope side. It just wasn't making a lot of money. And I was used to this consulting revenue, which was nice, but intensive. And Planscope was doing well enough, but these things take time. So she's like, well, what if you, like, you're getting a lot of people who are canceling because they run out of work, or whatever else. What if you help them in some way with a paid product that isn't software? And this, to be honest, was very insulting to me as a developer because I thought, I'm not going to peddle ebooks. Mm-hmm. So I think that the hurdle I had to get over was realizing that people buy software because they have a problem and they need that problem fixed. And software is one way of fixing that. But people can also buy some sort of systematic educational stuff to also fix a different kind of problem. So it's just a difference in medium. It's not one medium is better than the other. It's just different formats for different needs. So I wrote a very short ebook that I didn't think would do well called Double Your Freelancing Rate. And this is back 2011, I think. Sold it to this Planscope list I'd been building, and everything was still Planscope at the time. And I ended up making a few $1,000s from it during the launch, which I was like, wow, this is nice. This is cool. I like this feeling. And it helped with, again, it was peanuts compared to what I was doing consulting wise. But again, these were small transactions that were nice and really rewarding in a different way. So I started doing that, and then I kind of kept my ear to the ground and listened to what people needed. And, you know, it's one thing to teach somebody how to price, but if they don't know how to get clients, well, that doesn't help them price. So ended up doing another ebook called The Blueprint, which was a very short crash course on what should your website do and what should it say and things like that. And then I did an online workshop for people who wanted to go from being a freelancer to an agency. And that was just me for 2 days, 5 hours a day, kind of rambling on about hiring and company culture and how to do internal retrospectives and like just all this stuff I had done. And again, at this point, it was pretty much all my own anecdotal experience, right? Mm-hmm. That did well. Eventually, podcast emerged from that. It started building up and doing well. And I realized I was kind of ignoring the whole Planscope SaaS side of things, which is what I started doing all this stuff for originally, because it wasn't doing that great, but this other stuff was blowing up. So I kind of ignored that for a while, the Planscope side, focused more on the education content side, did the podcast that led to running my own conferences, more products, kind of trying to cover the full spectrum of what does the average freelancer need to know. They need to know how to get clients, how to sell to these clients, how to sell paid discovery, how to, you know, all these different things. And I still haven't actually filled out that spectrum yet. But that's what I ended up doing. And it did well. And again, I had to kind of get to this come to Jesus moment where I said, well, I got to get rid of Planscope because I just can't focus on both. And so I sold Planscope, which was hard, but it was really interesting. I was like, wow, like I've sold an asset, which was new to me. And now I'm focused on this thing that I can dedicate my full attention to. And in doing that, again, I've always tried to stay lean. I'm kind of a jack of all trades in the sense that I do my own, like the site I designed, the email content and copy and articles and stuff, I write them all myself. Wow. The course creation, I do it all myself, including the video work and the editing and all. Like, I like doing it all. It's like, I'm a really bad business owner in that sense. I do way too much. The only thing I don't do a lot of is kind of frontline support. So I do have people who help with all things email support, but pretty much everything else, I enjoy getting my hands dirty doing that stuff. So I got to focus on this, and I was playing with automation and making it so I could kind of do as much as I can without needing to scale a full team. Cause I'd done the 11 people payroll, massive, you know, payroll monthly stuff before. I wanted to see how far I could go with this stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, Double Your Freelancing really came from, a content marketing thing that I did with Planscope that ended up becoming more successful than the software it was trying to promote, and been really enjoying it. And it's shifted from being my own experience from early on to being more research and research-backed. So one benefit of having such a relatively large audience at this point is I can do a lot of surveying. I can get on and do proper interviews and try to find out, like, just, you know, yeah, this worked for me. That's one thing, but how does this work in other situations? And really come up with something that, you know, is a little more less, hey, this worked for me, you should do it too, no guarantees, to being more methodical and research-backed, which is what I like. I like the data side of things. I like knowing that if I'm telling somebody to do X, Y, and Z, that there's an underlying core reason for why I'm suggesting that. So
for sure. Do you have like 2 to 3 tips for people who might want to start their own blog, or, you know, maybe they're starting it with a brand new content creation strategy? Because it sounds like yours was very effective, right? I mean, obviously it's still running, but when you were first starting out, when you were first, you know, writing those first blog posts, putting the website together, even kind of picking the topics to focus on, do you have 2 or 3 tips for people who might be at the very beginning?
Yeah, so I've got 2 tips, one of which is kind of ideation, or where do you get content ideas from? This I got straight out of Amy Hoy's 30 by 500 playbook, just put everything out there in the open. But basically what she recommends doing is finding what she calls watering holes. So I think the thing that I helped me early on was I'd go to like the Reddit or the subreddit for freelancing, or I'd go to different message boards like Hacker News or whatever else. And I'd find the things like, so you look at just the what people are submitting to Reddit. And like every other thing was about how do I get a client, or how do I, you know, how do I charge, or this or that. And you start to see kind of these recurring themes that keep emerging. And I think the thing that, the best thing you can do is to, and this gets much easier when you start to build an audience, because then you can just survey them directly.
Right.
But, you know, I like to, you know, what I do now, which is what I've done for many, many years now, is when somebody joins my list, in that welcome email, ask a question right at the end that says, hey, reply to this email and tell me who you are and what you need me to give you or help you achieve to make your membership on my list worthwhile. You know, something like straightforward like that. So, you know, they reply and they say, hey, you know, sometimes you get novels as a reply, but usually it's a few sentences, and you end up getting a lot of data that help you then. You know, I love it when you can get a, like, so, you know, say Josh, you reply and you say, oh, I'm struggling with X or something like that. I can then start off a new article that I send to my entire list, which is pretty much a response to you, but in a public format of a blog post, let's say, right? So that helped me a lot early on, because I didn't need to think, okay, blank slate, what do I do? Instead, I could just kind of respond to people, but at scale. So that was helpful. The other thing I think is to borrow as many other people's audiences as you can. So I mentioned early on that when I started with the agency stuff, I went in front of the Chamber of Commerce's audience, just like Barbara went in front of this random meetup group's audience. I had no relationship with Barbara. She goes to something I do have a relationship with, and she basically says to them, I don't know what she said, but I imagine it went something like, this would be really beneficial, I think, to your audience, and here's why. So I think if you can go and you can find ways of getting in front, it's much easier than just churning out content and hope the Google gods send you traffic. It's so much easier to actually say, here's a complimentary audience, even if they're not a direct match. Again, that's the thing I think people focus too much on, is needing everyone to be perfect that comes from a certain channel. This needs to be a perfect potential client or customer of mine. Right. To, you know, basically say, hey, I think I can help in this way. Here's why I think it would be beneficial. Ideally, if you can say something like, look, I'm not actually pitching anything. There's no like upsell, or I just want to be able to share this with your audience, because people are always wanting things like that, right? So that helps. And I think it also helps if you've done something like, let's say you've, even if you don't think you have enough people to warrant it, do put together a very thorough email course. Like, I have a 9-lesson email course. It's a crash course on pricing theory and how to think through what is the value of this project and what does this client actually need and so on and so forth. Just things that I've distilled down into a 9-lesson course, which is where most people enter into my funnel from. So when I go to a podcast and I pitch them, instead of saying, hey, my name's Brendan, I run this freelancing site, can I come on your podcast? Instead, it's something like, hey, I've got this 9-lesson email course, does pretty well. Here's what it covers. I'd love to come on and talk for 30 minutes about kind of the main big takeaways that people really get a lot out of from this. And that way it shows, look, I've thought through this problem space enough that I've put together this email course about, you know, whatever. I think I'd love to just give you a Cliff Notes version to your podcast. And I think it would really help them. So when I see that, if I'm on the receiving end of a pitch like that, I think, okay, this person, I can go look at their email course. I can go through it. I can say, wow, this is really good. I think, yeah, I'd love to bring them on. And the benefit there is, so I do that for guest posts. I do that for podcast interviews or whatever else. I can then say, if you want to dive deeper into what we just covered over the last 30 minutes, go to freepricingcourse.com. And I've got a 9-lesson email course that will continue where we just left off on this podcast. And right. That works really well. So I think like that's the kind of thing that I think if you can have a product, an asset, a free thing, like an email course, that becomes a really effective lever that you can use to get in front of other people's audiences and also really tie in what you're talking about with them, either in a guest post or interview, into a next step instead of it being like, go buy something of mine or whatever else.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like a great little asset in and of itself, especially the way you're using it. Brendan, that it's really been cool hearing the journey that you've been through and like all these different products, services, business models, things like that. Could you try and summarize that long, you know, experience and journey into like two or three key takeaways, things that you've learned or things that you would tell to others that might be near the beginning of those journeys that might help them?
Yeah. So I think the big thing is, I think one thing that I've done pretty decently is kept my ear to the ground and always try to, like I still don't have a grand plan of everything I want to get done or want to do or whatever else. It's really just, you know, put my ear to the ground, try to listen to what people are either telling me directly or what they're telling me indirectly. So reading between the lines of how they're introducing themselves and what problem they have and so on. And then reacting to that through either content or paid content or whatever else. So I think that's one big thing is to be able to have systems in place, and automation makes this really easy to be able to collect data like that. And then to normalize that data into key themes, key recurring takeaways that you find. So I think that's one thing is just be able to have that kind of awareness. The second thing would be to, I think one thing that's helped me is, and this kind of ties into what I just said, is to be constantly modifying your approach. So instead of thinking, oh, I've got my email course, it's done. Instead, do two things. When people join, say, hey, you just typed in your email address because I've somehow convinced you that this would be a good thing. Reply and tell me, what do you need this to achieve for you? And then at the end of the email course, same kind of thing. You say you've completed it. Now, did this give you what you needed? If not, let me know. And then you can kind of constantly start to kind of focus in and you're going to get, you know, oddball responses that are completely out of line with what you're doing. But eventually you might start to think, oh, I missed the mark here, or I need to fill in some blanks here and, you know, so on and so forth. So I think that's another big thing that I treat that kind of feedback as these are bugs people are finding.
Right. Right.
And, that's a good approach. Know, and I think that's just something that I think not enough people are doing, but I think it's beneficial for you, but also beneficial to them. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I can think of in terms that I haven't covered.
But about in terms of the difficulties? Because obviously, business is hard, right? For lack of a better way of putting it. Were there strategies or ways that you dealt with getting through maybe the tough times or when you weren't sure about if things were going to work out, if you weren't going to, you know, meet payroll next month? or any resources you've really relied on, whether that be books, podcasts, people, anything like that.
I think early on I kind of took the mistake of it's like an employee mistake, right? Where you get a paycheck and you basically say, oh, this is all mine. Whereas when you're running a business, you need to have really a difference between revenue and profit. So profit is what you basically own. Revenue is money that comes in. And it took me a while to really get good at saying, well, you know, if things are going really well now, maybe they won't go as well next month. Let's set aside some to kind of normalize and even things out. So I think that's one, and that came through just a lot of potential disasters that made me get a lot better with that. So that would be one thing. And the other thing would be, I think just like when things are, well, there's two things. So let's say the thing I don't recommend people do, especially this is true, if not on the consulting side, but more so on the product side. A lot of people are like, I'm going to create a course. I'm going to do this. I'm going to build software. I think the thing that I wish I would have done better in retrospect was starting out with things that are more live, don't scale sort of thing. So like, for example, I just did this mammoth 6 hour video course on getting clients. And for me, I would not have been able to go into my cave and do that and maintain my motivation and everything else without some sort of fire that was keeping me motivated. So for me, what a lot of people don't know is that I'd been teaching. I mentioned that course that I did early on about going from freelancing to becoming an agency owner. That was done, I think I did it about a dozen or so times over the span of about probably 2 years. Yeah, 2 years, where it would be a small 15-person live group, 5 hours a day, webcam to webcam, Google Hangout thing. And I got so comfortable teaching this again and again and again. And I was hearing from people direct feedback about where they were still confused and this and that. So every subsequent version of that workshop was better. So by the time I got to the camera and was going to record this course, I mean, I knew it like the back of my hand. I knew what I had to cover because I'd done this so many times, you know, in a way that, again, I didn't want to be doing live courses, live workshops again and again and again. I wanted something more turnkey. But a lot of people jump directly to the turnkey, or they want to go straight to the writing a book or doing this. But I think if you can focus more on, you know, how can I deliver value to people in a way that doesn't scale and is more individual and more dialogue based instead of a monologue. So if you're doing a course that is a video course or a book, that's effectively a monologue from you to them. But if you start with dialogue, you're going to end up with a better monologue at the end. So that's something that I think a lot of people want to jump. They want to jump to the standalone product where people, while they're sleeping, find their site, click the buy button, key in their credit card. They now deliver the product to them electronically. Their job is done and now they've made money. And I know that's where everyone wants to get to. But I think the thing that people need to do, if you want to do it right, if you want to build the right product that teaches the right stuff, is to do it more manually a few times.
Yes, do the things that don't scale. Just like you said, I just had a podcast episode go live with, her name's Michelle from The Business of Baking, and she started a whole blog and online business just because she started running her own course in person, teaching a few people how to run a bakery. And she would do it once a week or two, and every week more and more people would show up. And just like you said, she would make it a dialogue and improve it each time. And now she's doing huge things that don't even have to do with baking anymore. But that's great advice, Brennan. Really appreciate you coming on. There's a ton of awesome insights and value and hearing more about how your career started and evolved. Where can people find you if they want to learn more, if they want to, you know, read some of your blog posts, get some of your content?
So this is my trick thing I mentioned earlier, right? Where the usual thing would be, oh, check me out at doubleyourfreelancing.com or check me out at rightmessage.com. But if you want to dive deeper into what we've been covering about, you know, we talked a bit about kind of my journey as a freelancer turned agency owner. freepricingcourse.com will take you to a 9-lesson email course, free email course, that is very systematic, very framework-based, and is probably, Josh, where you met me from. That's the best place, honestly, if you want to kind of get a crash course on a lot of the, not as much the kind of building an online business side of things, but more on the consulting side, that would be the best place to go.
Gotcha. The man practices what he preaches. Brennan, really appreciate you coming on again, and hope to keep in touch.
Of course. Thanks, Josh.
Hey, everyone. Josh here, checking in just one last time. Wanted to say thanks so much for listening to the podcast episode. I hope you got a ton of value out of it. And if you want to keep getting more of the Solopreneur Grind content, make sure to join the email list. What I do is send 3 emails a week with additional content, such as what's going on in the background of my solopreneur journey, insights I'm having on business, and updates when new podcast episodes like these come out as well. It's free. It always will be. The link to join is in the description of whatever podcast platform you're listening this to on. Really hope to have you on the list and continuing to share these awesome solopreneur journeys and insights with you as well. Have a great day and hope to see you soon.